monumental in recorded history. The opportunity to investigate a phenomenon that could change our destiny. A look at ourselves, 1,000 years in the future.
We're going to examine and perhaps question some widely held theories of what may have happened to this earth of ours. We're going to investigate some strange and bizarre events in the present. Unbelievable happenings as fresh as today's headlines. And more important, perhaps, we're going to take a searching and scientific look into the future. We're reaching more and more out into space. Perhaps, as we may learn, someone, something, somewhere in space is reaching out to us.
Who the visitors are, where they're from, and what they want is unknown.
Bigfoot was attracting national attention and was now rapidly becoming the most intriguing mystery on the North American continent. Scientists and photography experts have examined the individual frames of this film and have come to the conclusion that the film and the creature are authentic.
Telepathy, psychokinesis, Bigfoot and black masses, UFOs and Atlantis, Kirlian photography, cloning, and cryonics. These subjects all have one thing, indisputably in common. People want to know more about them. For mankind's future, on Earth, and beyond.
Welcome to After Dark Radio with your host, Brian Alvarez.
How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here, After Dark Radio. It is December 27, 2024. Figure4Online.com/WrestlingObserver.com. A day late. It's holiday season. Got a lot of stuff going on. But we are here, and in fact, we got a lot to talk about today. Part two of our special interview with Michael Cremo, the author of Forbidden Archaeology and many other very interesting books as well. Part one aired last week. If you haven't checked it out, make sure you do it up at WrestlingObserver.com or anywhere else where you listen to this podcast, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, etc. This is the last podcast-only version of this show, because next week it is New Year's, and so we will not be doing a show. We don't have a regularly scheduled show. I cannot say for sure that I will not do a bonus show, because I have done them before. So subscribers might get a bonus show next week. But the week after, January 8th, After Dark Radio is going live every Wednesday on Sports Byline USA. It'll be on over-the-air radio. You'll be able to hear it in over 200 affiliates across this country. And, of course, you can also hear it on TuneIn Radio, where, of course, you can also listen to Wrestling Observer Live. TuneIn Radio is a great app. You can search Sports Byline, and you can listen to all of the Sports Byline programming from anywhere in the world. And we will be live every Wednesday at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern. Yes, that is the afternoon. It is still called After Dark Radio. I suppose I could rename it Afternoon Dark Radio, but doesn't have the same ring to it. It'll still be called After Dark Radio. And it will be airing on overnights on Sports Byline USA as well. So if you want to just have that vibe, you don't have to listen to the show live. You can listen to it overnights on Sports Byline USA. So easiest place to listen, if you want to listen live, is on Sports Byline. And as noted, you can find that on TuneIn Radio if you don't have an affiliate in your area. And it will also be airing live on YouTube at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern as well. And subscribers to WrestlingObserver.com, Apple, Spotify, etc., YouTube, they will get the full replay. And even though the show is live, every other week we're going to have a special guest on. And what I'll do is an hour on the radio with the guest. And then when the radio show goes off the air, we will do an additional 30 minutes or so, maybe even more. And that full podcast will go out to subscribers. So if you're listening for free, if you're a fan of After Dark Radio, listening on TuneIn, Sports Byline, YouTube, wherever, live, well, you'll get bonus content as a subscriber. And obviously, you can subscribe here at WrestlingObserver.com, or you can get the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. And the easiest way to find all of those is to just go to f4wonline.com/apple, f4wonline.com/spotify, at 4wonline.com/YouTube. And you can sign up and get all of the After Dark podcasts as a subscriber. Full length, no commercials if you're a subscriber. And if you're a wrestling fan as well, all of the wrestling shows. And we do 84 shows every month as part of your subscription. So sign up today if you don't want to miss out on After Dark Radio. Now we're going to get to Michael Cremo here in a little while. Tons of things we talked about in both last week's and this week's interview, including humans and dinosaurs coexisting, Mokele and Mbembe, all sorts of different topics. The start of his career, some of the first anomalies he noted, what mainstream archaeology says about how long humans have been around and how long he thinks humans have been around, whether this is a case of perhaps humans existing in their current form for millions and maybe billions of years, or perhaps humans time traveled. Perhaps some of these things were left by aliens. I'll ask him all of these questions. So it's a very, very interesting interview with Michael Cremo coming up here in just a moment. But first off, a couple of news notes. This year from Yahoo News, researchers in Siberia are conducting tests on a juvenile mammoth whose remarkably well-preserved remains were discovered in thawing permafrost after more than 50,000 years. The creature, which resembles a small elephant with a trunk, was recovered from a crater. The carcass weighs 240 pounds, brought to the surface on an improvised stretcher, said Maxim Cherpazov. His first name is Maxim. He is of the Lazarev Mammoth Museum Laboratory in the city of Yakutsk. Mammoth was probably a little over a year old when it died, and it has a head and a trunk, and it is remarkably well preserved. What's the point of this? Well, the point is, I wouldn't say we're close, but science is working on potentially bringing back the woolly mammoth. The woolly mammoth has been extinct for thousands of years, and I was actually astonished to learn recently. I thought that the last mammoths died out around the time of the last ice age, 11,000, 12,000 years ago. But as it turns out, they may have been around as recently as 4,000 years ago, which is crazy to think about. Humans and mammoths coexisting until 4,000 years ago. And essentially what they can do is they found so many well-preserved mammoths frozen in ice that they could conceivably take out DNA, and essentially they would use a, African elephant. And the African elephant is a close enough living relative that essentially it could give birth to a woolly mammoth, at which point they would breed more woolly mammoths. And it's a crazy story, but they are in fact working on this. So finding another one here remarkably well-preserved is another step towards bringing back the mammoth. So what a Christmas delight that would be to see woolly mammoths back roaming the tundra yet again. Also, this from the Daily Mail. And this is from the Daily Mail, which is, I guess maybe take it with a grain of salt. But a CIA document, it says here, claims life did exist on Mars. So, yes, this was a government document I'm about to tell you about, but if you know anything about the CIA and some of the, quite frankly, outlandish things that they did in the 60s, 70s, 80s, I'm sure even today, you will not be surprised to hear this. The report is called Mars Exploration, May 22, 1984. It details how the CIA used astral projection, which is the idea that a person's spirit can travel through the astral plane, to transport a subject to Mars 1 million years BC. Because that extra 2,000 years is very important here in counting down. Study was part of Project Stargate, secret U.S. Army unit established in 1977 that focused, and this is a real thing, by the way, focused on anomalous phenomena, including remote viewing, telepathy, and psychokinesis. Participants were exposed to sounds like binaural beats, hemi-sync audio, to induce altered states of consciousness and promote psychic abilities. The experiment's subject was transported to the planet Mars during the specified year 1 million years BC and reported a, quote, oblique view of a pyramid and a, quote, very large road with a monument similar to those known among ancient Egyptians on Earth. The vision then shifted to a population of, quote, very large people searching for, quote, a new place to live because their environment was corrupted. So Project Stargate was the U.S. government's weapon against the Soviet Union, aimed at creating mind-reading spies who could infiltrate the minds of its enemies. It was eventually shut down in 1995. This was where the remote viewing project came from. And this Mars exploration May 22, 1984 document, I mean, I don't even know where to begin. Astral projection, 1 million years BC. I think the question is, if there were pyramids on Mars, and things are certainly different now as compared to 1976, when it comes down to the amount of Mars photography that we have, like high-resolution Mars photography, where are the pyramids at? Now, granted, you know, in the mid-70s, we had some of the first photos from Mars, and that's when we had those weird anomalies, the face on Mars. There were allegedly pyramid-shaped objects on Mars. And, you know, if you listen to Coast, Richard Hoagland, I mean, for years would talk about the face on Mars, the pyramids on Mars, etc. And I can remember when, like, I don't remember the exact year, but I remember following it very closely when they sent another probe to Mars, and they were going to go over that same area and take very high-resolution photos of the alleged face on Mars, etc. And essentially, and I was just waiting. I was excited. My God, what's it going to show? What's it going to show? And as it turns out, the high-res photos showed a big lump that looked nothing like a face whatsoever. You could actually see the photos online. And I just remember thinking, man, well, there's your face on Mars, Richard. But God, D would not give up on that. But anyway, it wasn't a face on Mars. It was an optical illusion. And we found no evidence of pyramids or anything like that on Mars. So color me skeptical that this fella used astral projection to go back a million years and found giants and pyramids on Mars. But that's what the report stated. So there you go. Now, here is one that somewhat similar. Not astral projection, but this is a scientific study. It came out in Explore. It's a journal, volume 21, issue 1. Brand new, by the way, January, February 2025. And the study is called Effects of Intentionally Treated Water on Cell Migration of Human Glioblastoma Cells. What does that all mean? Well, the objective here states, this study investigated if human glioblastoma cancer cells cultured in intentionally treated water could reduce cell migration, a prerequisite for metastasis, as compared to same cells cultured in untreated water. Okay, what does that mean? Well, it says here, three Buddhist monks entered a meditative state and directed their awareness to bottles of ultra-pure water while holding the intention that the water would cause beneficial changes. The study was conducted double-blind, whereby all aspects of the study involving cell growth and migration measures, as well as all subsequent statistical evaluations, were performed without knowledge of the type of water being used. Cell cultures were incubated in growth mediums prepared with treated and untreated water, and a wound healing assay was employed to measure cell migration. So essentially, they got pure water, one bottle of water, or one set of bottles of water, was just the bottles of water as they were produced or whatever. The second group, they had three Buddhist monks meditating and directing their awareness to the bottles, holding the intention that this water would be more beneficial. So the conclusion was that intentioned awareness appeared to change as yet unknown properties of ultra-pure water, resulting in a reduction of cells' migration activity. So in other words, in a double-blind study, the pure water that the three Buddhist monks meditated upon did in fact reduce cancerous cell migration activity as compared to the unmeditated on water. Further research, it says, obviously, is warranted to replicate these results and to investigate the underlying protein expression mechanisms in influencing cell migration. So essentially what happened here is this glioblastoma is a very deadly form of brain cancer, very limited survival rates, and essentially the effectiveness of therapy is affected by a wide range of things. And basically, it says here, despite the use of a range of treatments, including surgery, radiation, and chemotherapy, many patients suffer from local recurrence, highlighting the urgent need for better therapeutic strategies. This justifies, it says here, exploration of unconventional approaches, of which three Buddhists meditating upon water would be an unconventional approach. But in this double-blind study, it actually worked in the sense that the meditated upon water was... it resulted in a reduction of cell migration activity. So you can read the entire... I'll try and put it up on the board, the link to the entire study. But it's brand new, just came out, and very interesting. Also, this very quickly, since this was a story I was really, really interested in, and I can't believe it's been 10 years, the Malaysian Airlines, I think it was MH370, which vanished without a trace a decade ago, the government announced last week it is going to now resume its search after a decade. Maritime robotics company Ocean Infinity has signed an 18-month deal to lead the effort, and they will receive $70 million if they can find the aircraft. So obviously they've got a real incentive to do so. The search is going to utilize low-power transmissions to trace potential flight paths MH370 could have taken in 2014. So for those of you that were following that story, just wanted to know, where in the world did that airline go? Well, we may have an answer as the search is resuming after a decade. All right, we're going to head to Michael Cremo. He is the author of Forbidden Archaeology. We're going to be talking all sorts of different topics with him, including $2.3 billion year old grooved spears, spheres that appear to be man-made, and plenty more. So back in a moment with Michael Cremo here on After Dark Radio, WrestlingObserver.com. So obviously there's two things we're talking about here. If you look at the footprint, for example, the excavation, I mean, that's an indication of humans being alive much earlier than we believed. But if you talk about like the temple carvings, that's an indication rather that dinosaurs lived along much longer than we thought that they did. This would be more, because these carvings are not millions of years old, right? So, right. I mean, do you believe, I guess, one or the other, that humans have been around long enough to have coexisted with dinosaurs, and also that dinosaurs have been around long enough to coexist with humans recently, recent antiquity?
All of the above. You know, it's like things may be a little more complicated than we think, because if you get into what's called cryptozoology, there have been sightings of living dinosaurs in different parts of the Earth, sightings of tetrasaurs and the flying dinosaurs, the winged ones, big wingspan. There have been reports of living dinosaurs in the Congo region and the Amazon region. There are reports like that. So that's one possibility that has to be considered. And, I mean, there are a lot of living things that have been present since the time of the dinosaurs. The usual idea is that they went extinct after a cosmic impact event where an asteroid or some huge object came from outer space and smashed into the Gulf of Mexico region and created a worldwide environmental catastrophe that resulted in the extinction of the dinosaurs about 65 million years ago. So you're right. A temple carving like the one we talked about is not necessarily evidence for humans existing over 65 million years ago. It may be perhaps taken as evidence that the dinosaurs survived longer. That's a definite possibility. But the evidence of footprints, human footprints alongside dinosaur footprints in deposits that are datable by standard scientific dating methods, that's another case. So I think the discoveries of the human and dinosaur footprints in the same geological formation that has an age dating back to the Cretaceous period, that would be the final period of the dinosaurs' presence on Earth, according to the standard ideas. So that's another category of evidence. There's also other evidence of the human presence during the Cretaceous and also the Jurassic and the Triassic. Those were the periods when the scientists believed that the dinosaurs were present. The Triassic, the Jurassic, people are familiar with the films, Jurassic Park, etc. So there's evidence not in the form of dinosaur and human footprints side by side, but there's evidence for that's been reported of evidence for humans existing during the Cretaceous, the Jurassic, and the Triassic. So that's another type of evidence. And yeah, so you're right about some of the evidence, like recent temple carvings aren't necessarily evidence that the humans that made those carvings existed when the dinosaurs were existing, according to the modern way of understanding things, over 65 million years ago.
You know, the thing that interests me about the idea of living dinosaurs is that, you know, my daughter is 8, and a couple of years ago she was into dinosaurs, and, you know, I'm 49 now, and so I got a new book about dinosaurs to read to her, And it was absolutely incredible, the sheer number of dinosaurs that are that you can look at in these books. Like when I was a kid, it felt like there were like limited number, and now there's all sorts of different dinosaurs. And the thing with the living dinosaur idea is, it's not like if this were mistaken identification or whatever, you'd never hear a report of someone seeing a Tyrannosaurus or, you know, all sorts of different dinosaurs. I can only really think of four that have ever been reported. They're the pterodactyl-style winged dinosaurs. There's the Congo, the Apatosaurus, the Brontosaurus-type dinosaur. There's the plesiosaur type. And then there's that one carving of what looks like to be a Triceratops. But you would think that if there was nothing to this, if it was all people just imagining they saw a dinosaur, you would think that they would report all sorts of different dinosaurs that they have seen. But really, it's only a very small number. Nobody in the Congo reports anything other than a Brontosaurus. Nobody in Loch Ness reports anything other than a plesiosaur. You know, nobody reports anything in the sky other than a pterodactyl type. So it's just kind of interesting that if we're all made up or misidentification, they're only making up or misidentifying the same small number of dinosaurs.
Yeah. But like I said, you know, you've got alligators and crocodiles, which are pretty much the same now as they were over 65 million years ago.
Yeah, they've been around. They've survived.
Yeah, so it's not that creatures from that time haven't survived. And it's kind of interesting. Actually, each year, zoologists discover, you know, up to maybe a dozen or more species that they thought were extinct but are still alive. You know, it's kind of interesting that happens. Of course, you think, well, how could you miss something like a Brontosaurus? But apparently such things can happen.
Well, it's been less than 200 years since the mountain gorilla was discovered, and that's a very, very large animal.
Yeah, so that cryptozoology topic is very interesting. Where it comes in to human type of research is that apparently there could be living ape men, I guess you could call them, beings intermediate between anatomically modern humans and primitive apes and monkeys. In the world of science, they're known as, these intermediate creatures are known as Australopithecus and Homo habilis and Homo erectus, Neanderthals, Denisovans. So there are apparently living representatives of species like that. That takes you into the whole Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Yeti, Almas area of evidence for living fossil hominins.
So you would know, obviously, much better than me, but when I think back as to your book and other books about extreme human antiquity, which I think is actually the name of your new book coming out, the two that really, two of them that really stick out are the alleged 2.3 billion-year-old grooved spheres and the alleged shoe print, not a footprint, but a shoe print that seem to have stepped on a trilobite.
Yeah, that was from Utah. Actually, my Forbidden Archaeology co-author visited the discoverer of that shoe print with the trilobite on it. His name, I can't exactly remember right at the moment, but Richard Thompson, my colleague, went and visited him and took some photographs of the shoe print, which was found at a place that's called Antelope Springs in Utah. He was this fellow was a rock hound, so he was collecting different kinds of minerals and fossils and things like that. And he split open this piece of rock, and inside he saw the shape of a shoe print with a trilobite, which is a creature that existed, according to modern science, only during the Cambrian period, you know, a very long time ago in terms of the history of the Earth, over 500 million years ago.
And it's believed they went extinct 251 million years ago.
Yeah. So it was really kind of interesting. From the footprint photographs that we got, Richard did a computer analysis of them, and he found that the shape of the shoe print matched almost perfectly shoe prints made in sand today, if you do it experimentally. And he noticed that the heel of the shoe print was worn down in the place you would expect it. You know, if you've worn shoes for a while, you see, I mean, according to the way that you walk and distribute your feet, the heel starts to wear down in a certain place. And that feature, again, which he analyzed using computer studies of shapes of shoe prints, he found that it matched perfectly what happens with a shoe like that. So it was an interesting case. And as far as the groove spheres from South Africa, they came to my attention through a report in a tabloid newspaper, News of the World or something like that. I forget the exact name of it. But I would never include something in forbidden archaeology just on the basis of a tabloid newspaper report. So what I did, however, I didn't reject it either. I just wanted to get a little confirmation of it. So they mentioned that the object or objects were in a Museum of Natural History at a place called Klerksdorp in South Africa. So I got in touch with a scientist at that museum. He was actually the director of the museum. And I asked him about these objects. And he said, yes, they are there. And he sent a picture of them. And later I asked for samples, and he sent samples to me. One of them was about an inch and a half in diameter, perfectly spherical in shape, with three parallel grooves engraved around the equator of it. You know, three parallel grooves going all the way around it. And, you know, my position on them is they're reported to have been found in a mine in South Africa near a place called Otonsdal. And my position on them is that they appear to be manufactured by some kind of intelligent being. But if somebody can give me a purely natural physical explanation how they could have formed on their own without any intelligent intervention, I'd be prepared to accept that. And to this date, no one has been able to do that. So I think the possibilities has to be considered that these objects, which were found in layers of sediment in this mine about 2.8 billion, not million, years old, has to be considered. Now, in different internet discussion groups, some researchers and others raised questions about them. One of the researchers, a geologist, wrote to me that, well, these things can be found anywhere. I've seen some in San Diego, in La Jolla, on a beach there. And, you know, I asked him, well, can you send me a photograph of one? And he said, well, no, I can't. Maybe 50 years ago that I saw this thing, and I didn't photograph it. So nobody's been able to provide me with any credible, convincing evidence that these could be purely natural formations. They were shown on a documentary that appeared on the NBC television network. And before they would agree to have them in the documentary, they said, you have to send it to an independent company of metallurgists and get some testimony about them. And if they check out from the metallurgists, then we'll consider using them in the documentary. So that was done. We submitted them to an independent company of metallurgists to examine, and they found they were made of hematite, which is a kind of semi-precious stone. It's used to make jewelry. And they determined that they couldn't explain how the grooves could have formed naturally on the surface of this spherical object. And later, so they appeared in the documentary, and later some scientists from actually a UFO organization called MUFON, Mutual UFO Network, I think it's the acronym for MUFON, M-U-F-O-N. They examined it. They took I gave a sample to them, and I gave them permission to cut it. So they cut it, and then they measured from the center of the object out to the edge of it. In other words, they measured the radius of it, and they found that the radius of it varied by less than 1/10,000th of an inch as you go around the circumference of it, which means it was engineered according to a very high level of accuracy that is difficult to duplicate even with modern technology. So they're very interesting objects. But as I said, if someone can give me a convincing natural explanation how they formed, I would accept that.
So as we kind of delve into some of this extreme antiquity, I guess you know, when we're talking now about cryptozoology and other things, you know, there are other theories that people would come up with. For example, is it more likely that humans have actually been around for hundreds of millions of years, or is it possible that maybe some of these artifacts were something that maybe an advanced civilization from outside of our planet came here millions of years ago and left some evidence, or even the idea that at some point we might develop time travel? And, you know, if you ask somebody, hey, if you could go back in time, where would you go? I mean, no one's going to say, I want to go back to the pandemic. They want to go back and see the dinosaurs, or they want to go back. I mean, are those potential explanations, or you think the evidence is that most likely these were humans and we just have the wrong timeline in textbooks?
Well, I think all the possibilities that you mentioned are good candidates. In Forbidden Archaeology, I just gave the facts about each case.
Sure.
Here's the object, or here's the bone, here's the footprint, here's who found it, where they found it, here's what the supporters of these discoveries say, here's what the skeptics or the critics say. And I didn't, in that book, do anything more than that, than just put the evidence out there. And one thing that it definitely means is that we need new explanations for human origins. But I didn't give any such explanation of the discoveries in Forbidden Archaeology. I left it for another book that I wrote called Human Devolution, a Vedic Alternative to Darwin's Theory. And that was deliberate because I wanted people to be free to think of their own explanation for these objects. And I think you went through the main ones that have been presented by different people to me. One of them being time travelers, another one being extraterrestrials, another one being a very ancient human presence. So I wanted people to be free to come up with their own explanations for this evidence, and I think that's a healthy thing. And as far as I'm concerned, the real story may be a complex interweaving of all those things, because people tend to want a simple explanation for things, a simple explanation, but things actually may be a little more complex than that.
So obviously, when you come across some sort of out-of-place artifact or discovery, as you mentioned, you know, there are going to be skeptics, and they're going to say this, or they're going to say that. Is there one example, or maybe a few examples, where to you, it is absolutely indisputable? Like, there is no valid argument against it. This, to you, is like, I'm certain that that this had its origins here.
Well, you know, to say that there's absolutely no doubt is kind of difficult, because depends upon how far you want to go. Maybe we're in a simulated world, and you know, the Matrix sort of idea. You know, you can get into all kinds of things. But in terms of the normal standards that people go by in terms of the way in which they evaluate evidence, I think there are discoveries that are, in my mind, indisputable, in the sense that when I presented them, nobody has been able to convince me that they're wrong. Now, in some cases, yes, you know, I think there may be one or two cases that I would no longer use, but as evidence for extreme human antiquity. But that is, I mean, what usually happens if I'm out giving a lecture about these things to a scientific audience or a general audience or any type of audience, is that if there's somebody who objects, what they usually do is just give a list of possible ways in which the discovery could be, what's claimed about it could be wrong. You know, for example, once I was in Copenhagen in Denmark, and I was giving a lecture about forbidden archaeology, and a Danish archaeologist was there listening. So I went through a whole list of these discoveries, and at the end of the talk, he made a comment. He said, well, don't you realize, Mr. Cremo, that in all these cases, the discoverer could have made a mistake, the dating method could have been misapplied, that there could have been an earth movement that resulted in a recent object being moved down into some very ancient layer of rock, apparently, or don't you understand there could have been a fissure that led from some very recent geological layer where there were artifacts that slipped down the fissure into the very ancient layer of rock? And that's the usual response that I get from a skeptic. And my reply is, well, yes, I do realize that such things can happen, but you haven't demonstrated that any of them did happen in this case. So that's not like a very scientific way to proceed. You know, if you're going to object like that, you have to show, well, in this particular case, there was an earth movement that resulted in some higher layers being placed under some lower layers, or there was a fissure at this particular location where artifacts from a higher level could slip down into a lower level. I mean, if we're just going to talk about possibilities, I told this archaeologist, it's possible that you're a holographic projection from Mars. And, you know, like, if we're going to talk about possibilities, I mean, anything is possible. But, yeah, so that's how I generally respond to
the criticism.
Propositions like that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Now, before we start plugging the new book, I want to talk about less extreme human antiquity. That being, yeah. You know, I think that even someone who's very by the book, history book, etc., I think even someone like that would admit that I don't think we know the extent of, for example, travel, worldwide travel 2,000 years ago. I think there was probably a lot more traversing the ocean. I think there are people here in the Americas, obviously before 1492 is obvious, but... You know, I remember hearing a Coast to Coast, and you know, there was a story about Egyptian artifacts in the Grand Canyon, which allegedly disappeared, and the story kind of disappeared after that, but it's been brought up of late. I mean, what are your thoughts on even recent human, 2,000, 2,500, 3,000 years ago, 5,000 years ago, age of the pyramids? I mean, do you think a lot of that timeline is inaccurate as well?
Well, I mean, there are things probably going on in the world today that we don't know about, like these drones that are flying around. We're not getting, I mean, we can't think that, you know, we understand everything that's going on this planet even today. So what to speak of in the very distant past? You know, we're making some assumptions. Actually, we only live in the present, you know, the present moment, which you know, even what we were talking about 5 minutes ago is just a memory, in a sense. So, yeah, there are barriers to our complete knowledge of any period of the past. But I, of course, there are different ways to access information about the past. You know, one is through the wisdom traditions, and the other is what we can physically discover. So I think you're right. There are those who have pointed out to evidence for what they call transoceanic contacts between things happening in fairly recent times, maybe only a few thousand years ago. Like earlier this year, I spoke at a conference put on by the Ancient Artifact Preservation Society, which is a small group. They hold a conference in Upper Michigan State every year. So I went to the Upper Peninsula in Michigan, where they've got ancient copper mines. And there are a lot of researchers that say that copper from those copper mines that were being worked maybe 2,000 or 3,000 years ago in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan were sent by ship to Europe for the Bronze Age, when they were making tools made of bronze, which is a mixture of copper and tin. So, and that's something that's not accepted by mainstream archaeology, that there were transoceanic contacts like that at that time. So, yeah, I think there are a lot of interesting questions for people who are interested in alternative archaeology. I focused my research on extreme human antiquity, but there are other researchers who are focused on things that have gone on in the more recent past, you know, the past 20,000 years or so. So, yeah.
Well, let's talk about your new book, which is coming out next year, which is Extreme Human Antiquity. And what can we expect, and when can we expect to be able to grab a copy?
I can't say exactly, because with printing schedules and things like that, it's hard to pick an exact date. But in the first part of first half of 2025, it will definitely be available. Basically, the book is dealing with cases of evidence for extreme human antiquity that have come to my attention in the years since Forbidden Archaeology was published. And it also includes updates about some of the discoveries that were included in the original book. So it'll be an essential item for those who like the first book to add to their collections. And hopefully some new people will also be interested in this topic. So it's in the final stages of production now. I just finished working on the index for it. So there's one or two items left to work out. Then it goes to a printer, and then it'll also be released as an ebook. So that's coming fairly soon.
Well, if you head up to Amazon.com, you can grab Forbidden Archaeology, the original, which is still available. You can grab a Kindle copy, a hardcover copy. There's an Audible audiobook if you want the book read to you. And the new book coming out soon will, I guess, have 32 years worth of updated information. And that'll be coming out in the first half of 2025. And Michael, I want to thank you so much for doing the show today. And maybe when the new book comes out, we can do another one and talk about that.
That would be great.
And of course, check out Amazon.com. Any other social media or anything where people can get a hold of you?
Yes, I've got a website, mcremo.com, that has a mail drop on it. So if people want to look at that, it has my upcoming events. Like, I'll be speaking at the Conscious Life Expo in Los Angeles, February 7th through the 10th. And I'll be talking about forbidden archaeology there. So, upcoming interviews, there's also a schedule for those. And my books are also available on that website. I have a Facebook page, public figure page, Michael Cremo, It's Really Me. I said It's Really Me because at one point there were people starting Michael Cremo Forbidden Archaeology sites. Man.
Fake Michael Cremos.
I'm kind of flattered somebody would want to be me, but...
Well, check out mcremo.com, everybody, as well as the page on amazon.com, which has all of his books that are currently available. And Michael, thanks so much for doing the show today. And of course, thanks everybody for listening. We will talk to you again after a while.